This is a CNA podcast.
It could be your sister, daughter, friend, or even you, taking an innocent selfie, posing in a park in your exercise gear after a workout. But that picture could end up on the chat group, with lewd comments and suggestive remarks. Just last month, the administrator of one of the biggest illicit chat groups called SJ Nasir Lemah was jailed for 9 weeks. He had more than 11,000 obscene photos and videos on his devices. While that should serve as a big warning, even more similar groups have sprouted, at least 60 according to a group of young people in Singapore, getting underway to snuff them out. And just what were they sharing? Pictures of schoolgirls on the train, intimate photos, and hidden spy cam footage from changing rooms and toilets. It's Thursday, April 22nd. In today's episode, I go behind the scenes to find out from one of the citizen investigators how she managed to unearth such sleazy groups and break the news to victims. No doubt, many shocked and unaware that some very personal pictures and videos have been making the rounds. I also talked to a volunteer lawyer working with sexual assault to figure out how we can fix this awful situation and stem such illicit groups for good. I'm joined by Nisha Rai, NUS undergraduate and member for Students for Safer NUS, who was part of the group that exposed 60 such groups circulating visuals of women in Singapore last month. So Nisha, we know it all began after you stumbled upon a tweet about such groups. But to a lot of people, that can be very disgusting and repugnant. So what nudged you to say instead, hey, I'll go investigate and check it out? Was there a tipping point or someone that you know that made it personal?
The tipping point that I had when I went to message the girl who was involved in this was firstly the fact that last year I had done the sexual assault first respondent training done by AWARE. And it immediately struck to me that if I'm attending such a course and it is something that I believe in, where I feel that somebody's safety, be it online or physical, is something that's very important to me, especially if it's a woman's safety. If I know that I have some form of training and background about as to how I can talk to a victim, that was the very first thing that had probed me into messaging her, which was why when I saw her tweet, like I saw it like late hours, and that was when I immediately went to text her and I asked her, like, and I don't even know this girl. So I asked her, I said, you know, are you okay? Are you fine? Are you affected? I think that's the very first questions that we have to ask, because people
after she discovered her photos.
Yes. People are very quick to say, oh, where was the photo? When was it? Where is it? But people are not very quick to ask, are you okay? Are you fine? Because I mean, at the end of the day, the victim's well-being and personal safety is the very first important thing that one has to take note of. That was the very first thing that I thought, that, you know, everybody would be quick to ask her, what's the links to report? What is it that I can help with? But I think it's very important to first and foremost just step in and ask, are you okay? Do you need some space? Do you need some emotional support? That was the probe for me to just talk to her firstly.
And then, you know, take us through how you managed to find and infiltrate this group. People surely know that they're doing something criminal, so they'll take great effort to try to cover their tracks and limit membership. Don't you need to know someone in the group to add you in?
So before the entire fiasco started, there were open invite links. And even in the groups itself, you had one person who had collated like a group links, who was just sending in and telling people to join. Or when they forward pictures from another chat, you see that at the top handle, that's like the group name. So the very first group that we actually had discovered was actually a Malaysian-based group.
Where'd you find it?
Someone in the group had told her that her picture was in this group. And then what happened was that she sent us the link, and I think there were about 3-4 other links, other Malaysian-based groups. And when we entered the groups, like the very first thing that I was like in a state of shock, because there was like at least thousands of medias in it, which means that it included pictures, like even normal Instagram pictures, your TikTok videos, Instagram videos, nudes, revenge porn.
Wait, so hang on, you mean to say that anyone can just enter?
At that point in time, yes, now you can't, because after the authorities got alerted, all these groups went on to close their invite links, and some of the groups even took the extra step that if you're a member of the group, you're not allowed to add anyone in unless the admin adds the person in. At that point in time, it was open, so as long as you click the link, you're in the group already. Before we made the report and whatnot, the very first thing was to obviously see, is there anybody that we know who's in the groups or anybody whose, you know, personal information is jeopardized? We just scroll the groups and you would see that how often people were sending pictures almost on an every like 3 hours basis, 4 hours basis. It was really disgusting to look at. And the worst part was that when you end up in one group, it's just like a chain. You go to one place and you end up in another place. It never stops.
It's a rabbit hole.
It's a rabbit hole. It's like you just keep going deeper and deeper and it becomes worse eventually. Each time you look at it, it's just, you know, it's horrible, like, basically. When we entered the first group, initially at the start, we only saw Malaysian-based groups until we went deeper and realized, wait a minute, it's a Singaporean-based group. It's a nasi lemak again.
How do you discover that?
One of the media that was sent was a pornographic material from the Nasi Lemak group. And the worst part is that in these pictures and videos, they watermark their Telegram names. So like SG Nasi Lemak is literally watermarked on somebody else's videos, pictures or nudes.
Wow. They stamp their mark of pride.
They stamp their mark. And that was even worse because, you know, you would think that it's not even your property. You shouldn't even be sharing it. And the worst part is that you're watermarking it.
And it's illegal.
People in the group, they're aware it's wrong. They just try to cover up everything by saying, oh, if they put it up online, what do you expect? But at the same time, just because somebody puts their personal information out, you're not allowed to take that information and use it against them. They say that, someone in the group had also mentioned things along the lines of, she posts on her Insta stories, a public account, technically anybody can see. Anybody can screenshot, people can reshare it and whatnot. But the whole point is that if they do reshare it on their stories, it's probably because, you know, they're genuinely praising the person. And when you reshare on your own Instagram story, pretty much the person is alerted. But these people are screenshotting these pictures and they're circulating it in the groups with ill intent. It's the whole idea of the intention behind the circulation and not necessarily the fact that you're circulating it. So you have people who, you know, go on to say that there's nothing wrong in what I'm doing. She puts it up like that. What does she expect? There was this other group of other types of media, which included nudes of some girls. There were minors. There were adults. And then the people in the group would literally ask for such content. They would ask for
such content.
Yeah, they would say that, do you have like a secondary school girl or do you have a specific genre or do you, like, it's really disgusting to the point that people are even asking, are there videos of pregnant women? You have such questions that are popping out in the group openly. And what do all these people do when they join this group is that when they join the groups, they're alerted on the spot to change their username, to change their privacy such that nobody can find them. I mean, you still have some people who don't do that, but majority of them end up doing that. So when you scroll by the members in the group, you will see that how majority of them do not have their names there. Even their usernames are changed. It's something anonymous. You don't even have their pictures. And they even have bots in the group that can track people who've entered the group by showing what was their name before and what did they change into, so that when you're joining these groups, they kind of like alert it beforehand just in case if the admin has to catch somebody to like make them leave the group, basically.
Why would the admin make them leave the group?
Because they are scared that these people might be potential threats. Right. Because the thing is that when they look at the pictures, like some of these people, when they join the groups, they are, for example, the images may be there or, you know, you see who the person is. And plus, at this point in time, the admins were also aware that it was circulating on Twitter and Instagram because they went to screenshot the petition. They went to screenshot some few things here and there and said in the group and say, oh, guys, we're under radar. We're getting watched now.
That's very disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
When all these pictures are shared, these visuals, and you've mentioned a whole range of them from things that are opened and innocent on Instagram, all the way down to pornographic material and visuals that were seem like they were taken by someone who was trusted. Mm. What are the comments?
People would ask, first and foremost, so some of them, when they send such content and such videos, right, what they do is that they ask the person's Instagram profile so that they can text the person because they say, oh, I think she's ready and available and easy to use. So they would just, you know, find her accordingly and then, you know, try to message her on Instagram or whatsoever. People openly ask for such videos. They do not censor. They do not, like, you know, put it in a nice way. They just ask for it. And they would say that, oh, she's hot or, wow, she can do this, she can do that. I also want her to do me. How much do you think would she charge? All that kind of questions, like, you know, they basically objectify and sexualize the lady. And the sad part is that the women whose videos and pictures are out, they do not even know about it. And there are some videos and pictures that you can tell it's local by the area that they're at or by, like, for example, what they wear in terms of their school attires. Because you even have, like, girls as young as, like, 12 and 13.
Hang on. But someone who joins these chat groups for the first time and is coming across all this can be quite shocking. Isn't there at least one person, there are thousands of them in these groups sometimes, isn't there someone who has ever said, hang on, this looks a bit crazy, this is a bit strange, going too far, this is criminal? Has no one said that?
No one ever says that. Only like there were when towards the point in time where this whole thing got reported and it was made online, because at that point in time the links were open, so people were coming into school. But before that, when you scroll the chats and whatnot, right, nobody has said that. Nobody feels that it's wrong. people feel it's okay. And because one person, I still remember that he literally said this line along the lines of, this is for pleasure, it's nothing wrong, it's only in the group. It's not even that they don't realise. They have circulated it to so many groups to a point that some people are even selling such pictures and such videos.
Okay.
Like they will say that, oh, contact me if you want so-and-so's video. Contact me if you want so-and-so's pictures. I have them. And then they will charge a certain price to it as if it's like some bundle set or it's like a buy one, get one free.
So Nisha, you're looking at all this and all these chats. I'm sure there were thoughts racing through your head. What were you thinking and how long would you say you would remain on each of these groups? Because I'm sure at some point you're telling yourself, I'm going to nab these guys. I'm going to stay to catch all these people. But is there a trade-off where you want to press the button right away, nuclear option, report to the police, versus gathering enough information to be able to say why this is so egregious, to nab as many people as possible?
When I saw this happen, I immediately lodged a police report.
Immediately?
Yeah, immediately lodged a police report because I felt that, like, you know, as fast as you can alert the authorities about it, it would be good. I saw her tweet roughly at 11:15 at night, and by 12 a.m. I had reported the Telegram groups, and within the next few days, people were also, you know, making police report, mass police reports about these groups and whatnot. Definitely the trade-off is the fact that usually on Telegram, because Telegram is where, you know, we have your school chats and whatnot, I remove all my pictures. I don't have a username that shows any form of like my name and whatnot. All my information is hidden on Telegram at least. Because why? I think the reason why I'm in the groups is obviously to see if like there's a sudden leak. Somebody suddenly spills some random information about their stuff that can be handy. And another main important thing is that if the victims whose pictures are out, and if let's say I'm able to identify the person or I can get someone to identify them who's also in the group with me, at least we can alert the victims and tell them, hey, you know, your picture is out. Someone has sent it. Do check it out and let me know if it's you.
So you're still on those groups?
Yeah.
How do you deal with it? I mean, just looking at all these day in, day out, it's quite traumatic.
It's very traumatic. Like, I remember the very first few days, it was very heart-wrenching when I was in the groups because for me, at least, I was like, I can't believe that someone is like that okay with doing that. They're that nonchalant about it. They do not think it's wrong. They think it's fine. You know, they feel that, oh, it's for pleasure, so it's okay. It's definitely heartbreaking to not only see the content, but to see the comments as well. That people sexualize openly, objectify openly. They feel that everything is fine. And the girls whose pictures are out there, they are young girls. They're 13. You have women who are in their 30s, their 40s. It's a huge age range. You have women who are in their 40s or 50s even. And there are categories. Like, if you want a hijabi, then you can find a hijabi lady. If you want a Chinese girl, you can find a Chinese. If you want Indian, you can find Indian. They would like literally have their little list out and be like, okay, I want someone like this, and like this. Do you have a content or do you have any of our pictures or videos? Or they would like send Instagram or TikTok videos and pictures of these girls and be like, oh, does anybody have her leaks?
Wow. Of course, the important part of your work also is informing the victims, right?
Yeah.
At least they're aware other actions can be taken. It must be incredibly difficult because these are visuals that are very personal, sensitive, and almost unbelievable because there's betrayal involved. How do you go about breaking the news to victims?
So the very first time when I had to do it, I had no idea. I was like, how do you say something this deep, this scarring, without causing a scar? Because the thing is that there were 8 of us who were, you know, really reaching out and whatnot. So we just said in the group, it is what it is. We have to say it. We can't hide it. There is no way to sugarcoat it and to soften the blow. You sadly enough have to say it. But what we do instead first is just to reach out and just to verify the person. We just like, oh, is this you? Once they respond and they're comfortable, then we break the news to them. We try to soften the blow as much as possible by starting off in a very positive note. And one thing that on my side, at least, that I took this as a conscious effort was to always send the message that it's never your fault.
How do you start on a positive note?
I would message the person. I would say, hi, I'm Nisha here. I just wanted to ask if this is you. Could you identify if this is you? A lot of these videos that were sent were also sent with their faces and whatnot. I would try to like identify their face and be like, is this you? I just want to verify. And then when the person tells me, yeah, it's me. So some of them already knew that their videos were out beforehand. Like in the previous Nasi Lemak group, their videos were out. Some of them had no idea. I would just tell them, you know, I would say that, okay, now that you've identified if it's you, so some of your pictures and videos were out, and then I'll tell them the nature, but I would not send it to them. I would just tell them.
Mm.
I'll say that if I would just tell them, if you're comfortable with me sending it to you, if let's say you wish to lodge a police report, then let me know. But if you're not comfortable, I won't send it to you. Because you do not want them to see something that can cause them to trigger emotions or to trigger them in any way that can potentially hurt them. So it's that everything is just kept by messages. I try my best not to put in images unless I really, really am positive that like I'm not able to identify the person with the image, because a lot of the videos had their Instagram accounts. So I would just ask them, is this your Instagram, or is this you, or is this somebody else?
Right.
But for those whose only their videos were out, but somehow we kind of like were able to identify them from social media, we would just tell them that, you know, I need to talk to you about something, and you know, this is going on. But we would not send them any of their pictures or videos unless they're comfortable.
And when you approach these victims, what do you want to say to them? What's your central message?
That it's not your fault. It's not your fault that someone decided to break your trust. It is not your fault that you trusted someone. And it's not your fault that you are putting what makes you happy online. Because your online space is your personal space. If it makes you happy to post what you want to post, go for it. If you feel that you can trust someone, go for it. There's nothing wrong in you trusting. It's not your fault that you trusted. It's the person's fault for breaking it. Because a lot of times, the victims end up blaming themselves. They feel that, oh, I trusted this wrong person and then this happened to me. Sadly enough, what had happened, but you cannot put yourself against it. You cannot blame yourself for it. It's not your fault. It really isn't. If all you did was trust your significant other and your significant other does this for whatsoever reasons, for revenge or whatnot, then take the action against the person once you're emotionally ready to. Because a lot of times people say, oh, go and make a report. But you need to be emotionally ready before you make the report. So I would always encourage that, like, whenever I talk to the victims, I say, you know, if you want to make a report, you're emotionally ready, go for the report. If you're still not emotionally ready to make the report, don't make it yet. You know, take some time, collect yourself together. Some things I would say is, it's not your fault, I'm here with you. Because at this point in time, it can be so vulnerable, they do not know who to reach out to. So far, the conversation is between me and the victim. It's not, the victim has not told any of her friends yet, or, you know, has not told anybody yet that, hey, you know, this is going on with me. Then they may be ashamed too. Again, it's not their fault. They shouldn't be ashamed for it.
But Nisha, just playing devil's advocate here, right? Leaving aside the victims, talking about precautionary measures, with people of the best intentions, mothers and fathers would tell their daughters, don't share these things with your boyfriend, naked pictures. You know, you never know. And at the end of the day, you're putting yourself in the hands of somebody else. Looking at all that was shared and all the pictures that you've come across, do you think that women have to take extra care in what we post on social media, or even sharing these intimate pictures with people that we love? Because ultimately, we can't control what other people do, and the costs can be damaging.
It's a bit tricky to answer the question why, because some of the content that were posted was literally of secondary school girls just sitting in a group and having fun. They're not doing anything that is supposedly or deemed to be obscene. They're just sitting in a group, you know, just enjoying together, eating together. They're posting boomerangs together. So anything can be repurposed, because like, as I think, like, as I mentioned, it's not about the fact of what has been sent. It's the intention behind it. A lot of these people say, oh, if they can repost it, I also can send it. But they are reposting it because, and they're reposting it, and the person that they're reposting is aware that that's going on. You know, and that's not necessarily an ill intent, but when they are sending it in these groups, it's for the ill intent of basically for horny young men, middle-aged men who are just horny and they want to just repurpose everything to suit their needs. At the end of the day, how can you not tell someone to say, okay, don't send your nudes, don't do this, don't do that? Then you're putting a restriction on the person's side, that what you're not supposed to do, but you're not putting the same effort and the same attention on the other person's side, that if you have received content, you should respect that content. So it should be a two-way thing. If you're encouraging one person to not do it, you should also be encouraging the person to also not do it, in a sense that you should respect the trust and the consent that the previous person has given you. So I think it's like really a respect on both sides that should be inculcated.
And now that you've handed this over to the police, on the one hand, do you feel relieved because now this is in the hands of the authorities who can do something about it? Or like you said, you worry also about whether this could scatter groups underground and hide the groups more effectively and use better tactics.
The fact that we reported it to the authorities, at least it's under their watch. So, you know, they're doing something about it. I have yet to receive any updates, so I'm not too sure. But they're doing whatever that they can on their side. Because at the end of the day, a lot of the people in the group have really encrypted their identity a lot. But somehow, one day, somehow things will spill over. And then, you know, they will eventually be identified. But at least now that the authorities have been alerted, they're scrutinizing, they're checking accordingly, they're doing their own investigations and whatnot. As for the underground groups, there were actually groups that were making underground groups the moment this whole thing was in the news. You would see people making, you know, underground groups and whatnot. Because I've been one of the groups, and then this one person said, I can't believe that she can't let us live in peace. Now she destroyed our peace by reporting these groups.
So last question, what do you want to say to all those people on those groups who are sharing these visuals and commenting on them?
I think definitely is to put yourself in perspective. If that was you, I'm not going to say that, oh, no, if what if that was your mother, your daughter? No, I'm not going to say that. What if that was you whose content was being spread? How would you have felt? Would you have been okay if people were commenting like this about you? What if the roles had reversed and it was you as a victim? How would you have felt? Put yourself in the perspective of the person whose content has been shared without their consent and see how you feel about it. And another thing is to respect consent, to respect boundaries. If the person has trusted you enough to send their content and whatnot, you should also match up to that trust by keeping it to yourself and not spreading it to everybody for whatever reasons.
Sidebar, do you still have faith in men?
Questionable faith, I would say. Definitely a questionable faith. I mean, obviously, not all men are like that. You have, like, even in the group of us, there are some men who've been helping me out. Like, for example, my brothers, my fathers, my close male friends. All of these people were not in such groups. They didn't even know that this was going on. And all of them have really been proactively helping me out by sending the petition around, by raising awareness, by even telling their friends about it. And, you know, educating, you know, from a guy-to-guy perspective. So,
Demonize men?
Yeah, so don't demonize. I mean, at the end of the day, some of them are good. Some of them have been helping us out. But I do not have any form of mercy or respect for those who've been openly circulating and thinking that it's fine to break someone's trust for whatsoever reasons.
Priscilla Chia is volunteer lawyer at AWARE's Sexual Assault Care Centre, and she joins us now. Priscilla, welcome to the show. SG Nasi Lemak was the first, but there have been many more illicit Telegram chat groups. Say you discovered your pictures have been circulated at these chats. What action can you take? And is it different if, for example, it's a picture that you shared on social media, just an innocent picture of yourself going out?
I think there are some differences, but if you find yourself in a situation where your compromising photo is being leaked, one obvious way to go about seeking redress might be to make a police report. The other might be if you know who the person circulating your photos are, and you know, for example, that person is persistently circulating your photos elsewhere, you might want to take a protection order against such a person because his or her conduct can constitute harassment under the Protection from Harassment Act. So that might be an order to make him know that he needs to stop his harassing conduct against you.
But that doesn't stop the photo from being circulated.
Unfortunately, it does not. And actually, if you are in such a situation, if you try to Google ways to contact, for example, Telegram Singapore, WhatsApp Singapore, you actually realize that there are no contact details that you can reach, or you'll probably be linked to some kind of a report this post or report this user kind of a website. This is quite a challenge for a person in such situations to try to directly contact their social media companies or platforms to remove their photos from their platforms. So it is a challenge.
Is there a difference when it's, say, a private intimate clip that one has shared with their partner? I'm sure when you talk to women in these situations and they discovered that these are photos they had shared under a relationship of trust and now it's being used in a very disgusting manner, is there a struggle as to whether they even go to the police?
That is a really real struggle, especially also if these are people whom you're in intimate relationships or even your own family member, your father or your mother. To even take that step forward to make a police report is already very distressing and is already a traumatic process. So unfortunately, under the law, it does place a lot of burden and weight on victims to take that step forward to seek accountability.
And what's your message to women about sharing such visuals with partners then?
It's really ultimately how much you trust someone enough to give him or her consent to possess this photo with the knowledge that trust may be broken. And in the event where these photos are leaked or circulated, there is a risk that they will forever be there.
But it's not just a matter of sharing pictures. I mean, it's really about drawing a line in the sand. When you have a relationship with someone and you trust that someone, surely we're not going to go down that line when we say, I'm going to check for spy cams everywhere I go, right?
Of course, the onus is on the person who possesses such intimate photos to be responsible and to respect the trust that has been given to him or her to hold on to these pictures.
Given that there's been an uptick in technology-enabled sexual violence cases reported by Aware, you know, from 88 in 2017 all the way to 140 in 2019, what are some precautionary steps that women like me can take to protect ourselves from these things?
Well, I think unfortunately in such situation, you would not even expect yourself to be in this kind of situation. So that awareness to take precautions might not always be present at that moment. But while some precautionary measures might be thinking about who you provide such image to, who has access to your communication devices, who might be able to access such photos or intimate recordings.
Okay. But of course, well-intentioned people reading this awful news sometimes also have that same mindset and question and wonder what can be done to protect loved ones from such situation. When someone defaults to wondering what women can do, do you think that is being careful or is that necessarily victim blaming?
It's very hard to draw that line. On the one hand, you do want to protect and want your loved one to protect themselves from danger. But on the other hand, the onus should be on others to respect boundaries and to make sure that they do not engage in conduct that harm others. It points to a more general problem in that a lot of weight and responsibility is placed on the victim to seek accountability.
But where is the line between preaching caution and perpetuating victim blaming, even rape myths that discourage victims from seeking help and reporting them to the police? Because I'm sure a lot of people, out of the best intentions of their heart, mother, father, sibling, would urge women to be more careful.
There are obvious ones, for example, your skirt length shouldn't be so short, don't wear such revealing clothes. But making sure that your friend is able to contact you if he or she finds that they are in danger, having emergency contacts on your phone that you can have an emergency dial if something happens. These are precautionary measures. They're not victim blaming, but really from a crime prevention, safety prevention perspective.
And is there a difference when it comes to, say, people that a woman is in a relationship with? Because on the one hand, you can take all these precautions to prevent upskirt videos and crime, but then when it comes to trusting another person, being intimate with them, is there a separate set of considerations or advice that you have?
In those situations, it's really tricky, but maybe when you start seeing red flags, when you feel that your decisions are not being respected by your partner, these are flags which are warning signs to tell you that maybe you should be careful.
And what do you think is the role of education here? What changes in sexual education do you see might be able to fix these problems over these illicit Telegram chats?
Well, I think a few things, but they draw fundamentally to your conception of what consent is. What does it mean to respect someone's boundaries, and what should you do when you are placed in a position of trust and someone places his or her trust on you? How do you make sure you protect that trust?
And just going back to our conversation about seeking redress and getting help to get these pictures taken off, what role do you see social media platforms playing in the detection and removal? Because we definitely need to see some swift action there, right?
They should have a duty of care towards their end users to make sure that the platform is safe for them as well. For example, in countries like the UK, they have a code of conduct which specifically imposes a duty on social media platforms to have proper reporting channels where users can report harmful behavior or compromising photos. And there is a corresponding duty to do something about such report from the social media platforms. They do have a large role to play because their platforms are being used to facilitate such sexual violence.
And that probably applies to an open platform like Facebook and Instagram. Yes. But is that realistic when it comes to chat groups that are encrypted? Because people would also say that personal privacy is the consideration in the first place leading to a lot of these chats being encrypted. It's also a key feature that people demand out of social media platforms like Telegram. So how realistic is it to expect that swift action can be taken? Because ultimately, social media giants might not be able to even detect that there are these pictures and comments.
I think that's where the government role will step in when they have the authority to request such compromising photos to be removed. In such situation, when you're balancing between privacy rights, there comes a point where such privacy rights must give way to conduct that causes harm to other people. That's how we can draw the line. When the particular conduct causes tangible or intangible harm to someone, that's when the role of the law, governments, regulators must step in.
Last question. Penalties for some categories of sexual crimes have been passed recently in March. Is that enough? And what do you hope to see out of the review on women's issues in Singapore?
First and foremost, in a population of 5 million people, there is only one service centre that specifically supports sexual assault victims. So that really tells us where our priorities are or not. And I really hope that there would be more enhanced support for survivors of sexual assault. That's number one. Number two, I also hope that there can be a focus towards dealing with technology-facilitated sexual violence. I think this is a growing area of concern. As technology advances, our response, if we do not catch up, might create a gap or a lack of protection for vulnerable victims. So in that sense, I hope there will be more laws or regulations, or maybe even a regulatory body that specifically deals with harmful online behaviour. One model that I'm possibly thinking of is in Australia. They have an e-safety commissioner, which actually is an authority that specifically regulates harmful online behaviour. So perhaps there is a model that we can slowly step towards.
What next in Singapore's fight to weed out such criminal activities as such groups potentially continue to stew under the surface and go undetected? And how can Singapore move towards a culture of greater respect between the genders? I'll leave you with these questions until the next time. This has been Heart of the Matter with Crispina Robert, our podcast editor, and Erin Low, our research writer working behind the scenes. And I'm Lin Su Ling signing off.